last year, we actually participated in some of the Black Lives Matter demonstrations here in Houston. And we immediately lost a handful of people that quit literally just within minutes after I sent the announcement.
Welcome to the Humanist Hour, the official broadcast of the American Humanist Association. In this episode, we'll talk about how letting some members of your group go can be good for growth, embracing a political humanist identity, and how a code of conduct facilitates social interaction. The Humanists of Houston are American Humanist Association's largest local affiliate group. They're on pace to become the largest secular movement meetup group very shortly. They've achieved that growth largely through reaching out to groups that we don't often see at humanist meetings, through executing strategies that some people try to tell us will drive people away. This week, Vic Wang, president of Humanists of Houston, and Benita Malone, their volunteer coordinator, join me to talk about embracing diversity and social justice, making meetings and volunteer opportunities welcoming to younger members, implementing a code of conduct, and adopting a transparency that's radical for local groups. I am here today with Vic Wang, president of Humanists of Houston, and Benita Malone, their volunteer coordinator. Welcome to the show, Vic and Benita.
Thank you.
Now, you folks are an incredibly successful community. Tell me a little bit about the history of Humanists of Houston.
So we've been around since 1978. So we are Houston's original free thought organization and been a chapter of the AHA, the American Humanist Association, since 1981. Yeah, we've got a long history here in Houston, and we've, in the past few years, I've been involved in the group for about 5 years now as a organizer, 2 years as vice president, and 2 years, two plus, as president. In the time that I've been involved, we've had huge, tremendous growth. We typically have anywhere from 20 to 30 events per month, and we, all over Houston. We do a lot of guest speakers. We do book club type events, discussion groups, volunteer outings, activism. And of course, we also do some purely, you know, social activities as well. And it's a formula that's worked out pretty well for us. We've grown to, we're almost up to 2,900 meetup members. So, which makes us not only the largest chapter of the AHA by meetup member count, but we're now the largest humanist meetup in the world, period. Hopefully, within the next few months, we are at the pace we're growing. We should become the number one atheist, skeptic, humanist group, period, on all of Meetup.
So who has to watch their backs? Who are you about to beat?
For many years now, actually, the world's largest world's largest atheist community was right here in Houston as well, Houston Atheists. I'm currently involved with them as well as an event organizer, and I was previously a co-organizer with them as well until I decided to focus mainly on Humanists of Houston. But yeah, they're about 100 ahead of us, so we're pretty close to overtaking them. Hopefully by the end of the year.
Excellent. Always fun to be competing with yourself.
And I guess I should mention, just real quick, the difference between the two groups is, you know, I kind of gave a rundown of the types of events that we put on. Houston Atheists tends to be focused more exclusively on social gatherings, where it's kind of a get together and meet other atheists type of environment without any kind of a set agenda or any kind of, you know, moderation or anything like that. And, you know, we do a little bit of that as well, but we typically focus more on the more organized events that feature a specific activity, a specific speaker, those types of things. So that's what, you know, we kind of complement each other very well. We're, in a way, we're sort of like sister organizations.
So, Benito, how many volunteers do you need to have in an organization before you need to create the position of coordinator? That's not something I see very often.
I don't think that there's a magic number I mean, basically my role as a coordinator is just to put stuff on the calendar and people show up. And if it's just me and one other person, that's plenty. I do things that are meaningful to me and put them out there, and hopefully others will find them meaningful as well. And we have had really excellent response. I try and do, at a bare minimum, 2 volunteer events a month. We have a standing community giveaway, an event where it's very casual. We just hang out at a park downtown and give away items to anyone in the homeless community or anyone else that needs toiletries, fresh fruit, water, you know, any socks. We just get together and hang out and interact with the community in that way. So we do that once a month. And then our other volunteer activity ranges from working at the Houston Food Bank, which we've done several times, or we've also volunteered at an organization called Books Between Kids, where we were sorting donated books. We have done trash pickups. I typically try and piggyback with an organization that is already established and has their own volunteer needs, and we help them out.
Now, you say you're fine if only 2 people show up, but about how many people who regularly volunteer would you figure you have in your community?
There's probably a core group, about 10 to 15 people, and then others move in and out. But on a typical, we say, Friday night at a food bank, we'll get 15, 20 people. And on a Sunday morning when we do our giveaways for the community, it's probably about the same amount, 10, 15. But it's always, you always see new faces.
I'll get into a little later, I think, how you go about motivating people to volunteer, because I know this is a big topic among humanist groups. How do you get people out of their seats and into volunteering? But I want to talk a little bit first about what it is that you do and have done so successfully as an organization to build your community. Vic, you were saying that your events tend to be a bit more structured, so you have a standing monthly meeting.
Yes.
What does your monthly meeting look like?
Yeah, so we have it on the third Saturday of every month at one of the local community centers, and we kind of actually bounce between two of the rooms there that hold anywhere from 80 to 200 people. And every month we'll have a featured guest speaker, and as well as typically we'll also have a short talk, a second speaker at the beginning as well. And of course, in addition to opening announcements and kind of keeping everyone up to date on the latest developments and upcoming events and what kind of things we've got going on, we also have refreshments as well. You know, we've got coffee and snacks and bottled water that we provide. And hopefully, usually it depends on how long the talks usually last. Oftentimes, we especially with the Q&A process, we always have lively discussion that often goes right up down to the wire. We typically try to have time at the beginning to kind of let everybody socialize, and hopefully at the end as well. So that's kind of how it typically looks.
Yeah, we usually do get kicked out. I mean, one of the dreams that I would have is that we would have our own space. Because Saturday afternoon at 3 o'clock, the janitor is wanting to get out and go home, and he's often pushing us out the door.
Yeah, we do about a 2.5-hour block. So we cram in a lot as well into that 2.5 hours.
So one of the things I notice as you describe it is that your meetings are very unlike the congregational model that, well, several organizations at this point have been putting forward.
Yes.
Do you get people looking for something more like, for those who were believers, say, the church that they left? Or are you finding that people are happy to have a choice where that's not the vibe that they're getting?
I would say yes. Well, okay, so we do certainly provide a sense of a community, you know? We do certainly try to provide something that is kind of for people who have left the church world that, hey, we've got a community here that you come to and meet other like-minded people and socialize and hear great talks and learn great things and take part in important activities together. But as far as being, you know, we certainly, by design, by conscious choice, we have tried to avoid some of the trappings of the church world, some of the, which I think is kind of what you're referring to. You know, I mean, we take donations, at least, well, we did until the community center said we can no longer, nobody can take donations at the facilities anymore. That was kind of unfortunate. But in the past, and in at events where we can take donations, you know, we try to avoid doing the passing of the plate type of thing. And one reason for that is that, you know, we do kind of want to avoid a churchy environment. But also, you know, specifically speaking on the passing of the plate, you know, I think that we don't want to shame anybody. We don't want to pressure anybody to donate. We don't want to single anyone out. We certainly want to make our events accessible to everyone of all, you know, socioeconomic status, you know, income levels. We don't ever want anybody to be discouraged from coming to our events because of lack of funds. And so, you know, that's one reason, of course, with small, certain exceptions, you know, sometimes we will do a special fundraiser for a specific event, like we did just recently for the Pride Festival. But other than that, we try to keep all of our events free and accessible to everyone.
And another benefit, I think, of the monthly gatherings is just the variety of speakers that we get in. And it is really refreshing to me, and I think others appreciate that as well. You're not listening to the same person, you know, every Sunday like you would at a church service. We have specific topics with really knowledgeable speakers. And if something interests you, you go. If something isn't particularly interesting to you that month, you don't go. And there's none of the guilt that comes with, oh, I didn't go to church this week, or I should have gone, or whatever. It's very open and very welcoming, and it's just meaningful because there's so much to learn.
Yeah, well, you know, and piggybacking on what Benita just said, if anybody's interested in checking out our previous guest speakers that we've had, we have a YouTube channel. Just go to YouTube and search Humanists of Houston. And we have, I believe, almost somewhere around 80 videos out there now of our previous events and guest speakers. And you can kind of see, you know, what a wide variety of speakers we've had. And what a diverse set of speakers we've had. I mean, people from all kinds of different, you know, ethnic backgrounds and sexual orientations. And, you know, we definitely take pride in the fact that we, well, I should say, I suppose, that we've never specifically gone out of our way to try to, you know, bring in someone just for the sake of having a diverse speaker lineup. Or, you know, we've certainly never, discriminated against anybody who is not, you know, a minority in some way.
You're listening to The Humanist Hour. I'm Stephanie Zavan, and this week we're speaking with Vic Wang, President of Humanists of Houston, and Benita Malone, their volunteer coordinator.
But as it just so happens, you know, at least I would say well over half of our speakers tend to be, you know, from, you know, some kind of a minority group or female for that matter. I mean, I would say this year, actually, it wasn't until last month. We had, I believe, 7 or 8 guest speakers in a row, none of which were kind of the standard, you know, typical white cisgendered male guest speaker that often tends to, unfortunately, you know, dominate when it comes to guest speakers. In conferences or, you know, perhaps in other organizations. So, yeah, that's something that we definitely are proud of.
Speaking of diversity and working to make sure people who are not usually heard do get to be heard, earlier this year, I was at the Secular Social Justice Conference down in Houston. Humanists of Houston was a sponsor of that. Is that correct?
Yes, that's right.
What led to that decision?
you know, that was something that was sort of a no-brainer for us, really, because when we heard that was happening and happening in Houston, I mean, that was something that we being the board of directors, all of us were very excited about supporting it, both in terms of sponsorship, you know, financial support, as well as, you know, helping some with the organization of it, and also participating in it directly. You know, several of our board members were on the panels, including myself, and were actually very fortunate and honored to be actually taking part directly in the conference as well. And I guess the reason, I think the two really kind of go hand in hand, humanism and social justice concerns. You know, that's something that is a big issue these days, obviously, and has been for the past several years in the free thought community with regard to the groups and individuals who support social justice causes and really want to fight for equality and fight advocating for marginalized and disadvantaged groups and to try to help bring about more equality in our society. And then you've got those who are either don't care about it, or they don't feel that, oh, it's, you know, don't feel like it's part of what our community should be about. Or you have, in some cases, people who are flat out against it, you know, and it's very unfortunate to see that kind of a rift that we've seen for the past few years that seems to even be perhaps accelerating. But that's one great thing about being a humanist group, you know, as opposed to an atheist group or whatnot. You know, the fact that we are a humanist group, and it's not just about atheism. It's not just about lack of beliefs in God, lack of beliefs in supernatural. It's also about affirming a positive, secular, humanistic worldview that emphasizes compassion for other people and altruism, wanting to do good in the world, wanting to make a difference for the, you know, betterment of society. And I think all of our board is pretty much in agreement on that's social justice is a very important component of that.
Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree. And one of the other organizations that we partner with is Foundation Beyond Belief, which I know you've featured in past podcasts. And we are always looking for ways to partner with other like-minded groups. And there's a new Standing Up for Racial Justice surge is starting up a chapter in Houston. And I have been volunteering there too, and we look forward to working with them in the future.
Oh, and if I could add one more thing too on that, is that one of the criticisms I hear with regard to the idea of embracing social justice in free thought organizations is this notion that, oh, it's exclusionary, or that it somehow limits your potential member base, you know, membership. If, oh, well, you know, you should really leave it open to everybody, whether they care about these issues or not. If you focus on these issues, oh, well, people who don't want to be a part of that won't want to come and join. And, you know, that's, I know, for example, that was one of the things that was claimed with regard to the Reason Rally, that, oh, the idea that somehow emphasis on social justice, whether specifically with regard to the rally or just in the community in general, somehow that reduced the attendance. But look at our organization. You know, hey, I guess we're one data point, but you know, look how tremendously we've grown. We've, I believe, quadrupled in size just in the past 3 or 4 years. And that's all with, you know, a very strong emphasis on social justice and diversity. And we've certainly lost a few members because of it. You know, we last year, we actually participated in some of the Black Lives Matter demonstrations here in Houston. And we immediately lost a handful of people that quit literally just within minutes after I sent the announcement. And, you know, hey, maybe that was coincidence, but it was a little too coincidental. But, you know, my perspective is that if you're going to quit an organization over wanting to stand up for equal rights and social justice, then, you know, it's kind of addition by subtraction, really. So it's, can't say, you know, we're too disappointed to see people leave for that reason.
If they're going to go at all.
Right.
Obviously, you don't want to urge people to leave for that reason.
Right, right. We're certainly not trying to drive anybody out. But and that's the thing. I mean, you know, being a humanist group, it's interesting that some people, you know, often equate atheism with humanism. They just use them synonymously and use it as a euphemism, really. You know, it's like, oh, well, if you don't really want to accept the atheist, the horrible, evil, you know, atheist label, which, by the way, I should mention that I think for everybody on our board, we all wholeheartedly accept the atheist label. We are atheists through and through, and we do not shy away. I certainly don't shy away from identifying as an atheist. And obviously, we don't see it as being mutually exclusive with being a humanist. You know, humanism just means it's not just about what you don't believe, but also what you do believe. And that's a secular world, secular humanistic worldview.
Yes, I wholeheartedly agree. I am relatively new to being out of the closet as far as my atheism goes. In fact, I just came out to my family earlier this summer, and they still love me, so I'm very fortunate about that. I am just starting to get comfortable with the whole atheist thing, but I do agree that it's important to not only talk about what you don't believe, but what you do believe. And I prefer the term humanist because I think it's more descriptive, but I'm an atheist as well.
The point I was getting at earlier was that it's kind of interesting that we do actually have quite a few people that join our organization and are explicitly non-humanistic. They are atheists, but yet explicitly reject humanistic values. And in some cases, they're very, whether they're Ayn Randian objectivists or, extreme libertarians, that happens where sometimes, and certainly we're not going to kick them out or anything. There's certainly no test for being part of our organization or coming to our events with regard to belief. But it's interesting that, sometimes there are people who are really at odds in terms of their worldview, other than the fact that we agree on terms of secularism and agree in terms of atheism. But yeah, that's one reason that we do try to emphasize and make it clear through our messaging and through our events, the types of events we do, that, we do strive to demonstrate that we really are about promoting secular humanism and not just, we're not just an atheist group.
Now, humanism as a whole took a turn through recent decades of being much less politically oriented, being in some ways what I would consider the full spectrum of humanist beliefs, not necessarily emphasizing the humanitarian part. Is that something that happened with your organization, or has Humanists of Houston been pretty staunchly humanist throughout?
Well, I guess I should mention, since we are a 501c3 organization, there are certain limitations on the degree to which we can be political. Of course, there's a lot of leeway there. It's a very gray area. And in practice, it's not something that is really ever enforced in my, experience and based on my understanding. But, we do try to kind of remain, we certainly try to educate people on issues that I suppose could be considered of a political, nature. And, we encourage people to be part of the political process. Of course, we can't, of course, endorsing candidates and whatnot. That would be, kind of crossing the line. But, oh, go ahead.
We do have a voter registrar available at the meetings that we have, and we have hosted events that have been like question and answer with the League of Women Voters on what the ballot ordinances are and who's running. And so we try, I think mostly it's a be informed, get out the vote, political activism more than endorsing specific candidates. And we also did some get out the vote canvassing for the HERO ordinance that was unfortunately defeated here in Houston not that long ago.
And I don't think a lot of folks outside of Houston know what that ordinance was. Can you give them a little background?
Well, HERO stands for the Houston Equal Rights Ordinance, and it was designed to protect multiple classes of people, like from age discrimination, from disability discrimination, sex discrimination, and sexual orientation discrimination, and like veteran status. It was a whole measure of equal rights protection in employment and housing that got boiled down to a bathroom issue where the opponents of the measure simply turned it into men are going to be going into women's bathrooms and hurting people, and unfortunately, the Equal Rights Ordinance did not pass.
Yeah, that very, very unfortunate. But well, that, by the way, that was the first time that Humanists of Houston officially endorsed a specific political issue. And we joined the coalition, the Hero Coalition, to help get that passed. And Benita organized several volunteer outings to help get out the word and educate people, whether through canvassing door to door or calling, making calls at the phone bank in support of it.
But so, again, that was in conjunction with other organizations that had already.
Right. Yes.
Yeah. At the month, like Civil Liberties Union, you know, the ACLU and those organizations did the volunteer, and I just brought bodies in. I didn't.
You say that like that's an easy thing.
Yeah. Yeah. You still, you certainly did a lot, Benita. So.
Oh, thanks.
It sounds like you have always been somewhat political, but you have perhaps been getting more political in recent years. Is that a fair characterization?
I can't really speak too much for when my previous involvement, you know, more than 5 years ago. I think that's certainly the impression I have of, and I think our emphasis on social justice concerns is something that is more of a recent development as well.
One of the things that I haven't asked you about that I usually do is, tell me a little bit about how each of you ended up involved in organized humanist activism, because obviously most humanists don't even do that. You want to start, Benita?
Vic asked me to be on the board. No, I have always been a person who like to volunteer and be involved and give back to the community. And that's always been a priority and important to me. And being able to share that with my fellow humanists is really been a pleasure and a value. And it's something that I would do anyway. I was volunteering anyway. So now the fact that I can plug it in on Meetup and have people join me is just a bonus.
Excellent. How about you, Vic?
Yeah, so my start in terms of being an activist or, you know, or organized slash organizer was back in 2011, where Houston was very fortunate to have the Texas Free Thought Convention here, which was also the Atheist Alliance National Convention. It was kind of a joint convention that year that which a lot of local humanist atheist community helped to organize that as a, we had a planning committee for that. And I was invited to be on the planning committee. And that was an amazing, you know, wonderful experience. It was, I believe at the time, it was the largest attendance, the highest attendance at a atheist or free thought convention in the U.S. All the way until, of course, the Reason Rally ended up breaking that record. But we, you know, it was, some may remember that that convention as the final public appearance of Christopher Hitchens, I believe just a few weeks before he passed away. But yeah, that was kind of how I got my start. It was shortly after that that the head organizer of Houston Atheists asked me to come on board as an assistant organizer. I then became a co-organizer of Houston Atheists. And it was then shortly after that, the president at the time of Humanists of Houston asked me to run for the vice president position since the elections were coming up. So I took that on, and it kind of just snowballed from there. And now that's where I am now. And, you know, I should mention, you know, Benita mentioned it. Hey, you know, she it was me asking her to join the board that got her involved as an activist and organizer. And the same thing for me. And in fact, that's, I find that's often the case with a lot of in a lot of cases that, you know, when I became president and was trying to put together a board of directors, and I should say that we do have a democratically elected executive board. So, you know, it's not like I could handpick all of the board. But in terms of trying to recruit people to be a part of the board and to run for the executive board positions, you know, I sought out people that I knew from my previous experience and people that I thought very highly of. I, of course, also did not want to, you know, poach, you know, organizers from other organizations, so to speak. But, you know,
I have to commend you on that, because that's usually the way people do it.
Oh,
is they grab
really?
People who are already volunteering.
Yeah. And well, and so, yeah, you know, and, you know, to be perfectly honest, I could not possibly, the board, both currently and our previous board members, the ones who either have moved away or are no longer on the board, I could not have been happier with the board that we ended up with. And, you know, I kind of often found myself just kind of, amazed at, you know, these individuals were not already serving as organizers or on other boards. And I find that seems to be, pretty common when it comes to the free thought community, that there is so much wonderful talent out there and people that are interested and would be willing to be, organizers or contributors. But it just takes, you know, someone to reach out and ask them to do it. So that's certainly something that I encourage, you know, other people in other organizations to do, to seek out people like that and to ask them to be more involved.
So while we're talking about challenges of organization, there are some pretty classic challenges that humanist organizations run into. You've talked about getting people to serve, obviously. That's an issue. One of the ones that I run into fairly consistently with humanist groups is getting younger members in. Is that something that the Humanists of Houston have any difficulty with? Is it something that they've worked to address?
Yes, that is certainly something that we've, back in about 5 years ago, you know, when I first got my start, I guess kind of as seems to often be the case, so I've heard from people around the country in other humanist groups, is that, you know, humanist groups, for whatever reason, as opposed to skeptic or atheist groups, we do tend to be older. We do tend to be more, a little more homogeneous, I suppose, with a little less diversity, both in terms of ethnic diversity and gender diversity. For whatever reason, that seems to be kind of a recurring pattern throughout. And of course, the movement in general, of course, including atheist, skeptic, free thought groups, tends to be more homogeneous than I would like, certainly.
You're listening to The Humanist Hour. I'm Stephanie Zavan, and this week we're speaking with Vic Wang, President of Humanists of Houston, and Benita Malone, their volunteer coordinator.
But yeah, that was definitely the case, you know, 5 years ago. And that was actually one of the reasons the president asked me to come on board, was to try to help diversify the organization and see what we can do to bring in more diverse group of people and more younger people. And that's something that we have very much tried to, I guess I should kind of back up and say that, you know, we value our older members tremendously. You know, we value people who are, whether they are members of a minority group or not. So we certainly do never want to try to make it seem, you know, in our efforts to diversify, our efforts to bring in a more youthful, younger demographics, you know, we never want to do that to the exclusion of our older members, certainly. But one thing we've done is that a lot of it is just really in our programs that we've put on before. You know, we've try to bring in, for example, people that are well-known internet atheists. I guess is one, Aaron Ra, for example. You know, he's been a great, he's up just, what, 4 hours away in Dallas, and we've had him as a guest speaker a few times and drew, you know, huge audiences for him. We've brought in Seth Andrews, the Thinking Atheist. We've brought in, well, and also just younger speakers as well. You know, we were very fortunate for a few years to have Zach Coplin, who's now a journalist for Slate. He was back in high school, he was a big time activist for against creationism, essentially, in public schools. And he was here in Houston. So we had him give several talks. We also, you know, we had a local secular student alliance that was a high school group called Stephen F. Austin University, just about 30 minutes outside of Houston. And I encourage everyone to look them up because it was quite a story. It actually kind of got some press in USA Today when they tried to establish their SSA group, and they kind of got stonewalled at every turn until finally when USA Today picked up the story. That's when the school finally relented and granted them the chapter. But we reached out to them, and you know, originally we were talking about, hey, what could we do to help out the SSA groups? Maybe we can go and you know, give them presentations about humanism and educate them, right? Is kind of the initial idea. But then, you know, it was like, hey, well, why don't we bring them in and have them give a talk to us? I'm sure they have a lot to educate us on too. And so that's what we did. And it was an incredible presentation. I mean, just amazing, actually. I think three or four of their members that were involved with that whole process came and did a great presentation. So, and of course, a wide diversity of types of events is certainly one way to draw in younger membership. You know, things that are not just sitting around and talking and something very academic in nature, I suppose, is something that, in our experience, is something more conducive to more younger demographic.
One of the other ways that we're trying to broaden our appeal and accommodate our members is by including more family-friendly events. And especially with the volunteer activities that I choose, I typically try and make sure that children are welcome and encouraged to attend. I think that's one way where the churches have it a little bit easier with their youth groups and activities. And so we have a ways to go to be truly, you know, family inclusive. But another project that we're undertaking, Debbie Williams, another board member, has started a chapter of Navigators. And Navigators is basically a secular program similar to the Scouting program. That is just barely getting up and running in the Houston area, but that's one way where we're reaching out to our members that have family and might be interested in some kind of education programming on science and secularism. We partner with Camp Quest, too. That's I believe, Stephanie, you're familiar with that. You've done, right?
Yes, we have Camp Quest up here in Minneapolis as well.
Yeah, yep. So we have volunteers from Humanists of Houston that go into that, and we've given scholarships, and so we try and promote family-friendly and those kind of activities as much as possible.
Oh, and I should also add that, you know, kind of our big outreach type of event that we do each year is having a booth at the Houston LGBT Pride Festival, which the last 2 years in a row, incidentally, Benita was the head of the subcommittee for that. And as well as, you know, so we've done both having a booth there to help promote our organization, as well as we've had a float in the parade both years as well. So, and what we found, looking at our membership chart, that Meetup, by the way, provides great statistics, that you can see, you know, how many people are joining and, the growth rate month by month. And the last 2 years in a row, we saw very big spikes right around the month and the month after the Pride Festival. So that's been really great for us. And it's been really great to help, you know, support the LGBT community as well by being a part of that.
I noticed when I was looking at your Meetup group and your calendar, a couple of your recurring events are based around things that I would call affinity groups. So, for example, you have a women's meetup, correct?
Yes.
So, obviously, the question at any point when you're talking about all of these things that you've been trying to do to bring people in, is it working?
Well, you know, speaking of the women's group, I have not attended it yet before, so I can't really speak firsthand about what it's like. But I will say that, yeah, we've had a long time women's group that meets monthly. We have a Spanish speaking, you know, event each month where it's basically, hey, you can come hang out and speak, you know, Spanish people who speak Spanish can get together and socialize, or if you're trying to learn Spanish. And, you know, we've certainly found that these types of events, you know, oh, and I should add, you know, in the past, we do now have a chapter of Houston, of Black non-believers here in Houston. But prior to that, we held some events that were specifically, you know, geared towards the Black community. And all of these events were very successful and really brought in a lot of new people. Of course, every time, you know, we would have, you know, people, some random person chiming in and saying, oh, well, why are you having a Black atheist or Black humanist event? You know, would you ever have a white humanist event? And, you know, something like that, you know, the typical cliche, you know, sniping remark about it. And of course, you know, we would point out, well, you know, unfortunately, most events are, you know, white atheist events by default. That's kind of how it turns out. And, you know, the whole idea, it's not to be exclusionary. It's not to say, oh, we're trying just to, you know, have this event that's only for people who are Black. The way that it was trying to welcome in people from those communities who might feel perhaps not feel as comfortable coming out for the first time, especially if they don't know anybody. Especially if they don't know if anybody else is going to be there, would they want to be the only person of the particular ethnicity? I speaking firsthand, actually, there was about 4 years ago that I was at an event. I was the only person of Asian descent there, and somebody else showed up who also was of Asian descent, and we were the only two. And so I chatted with her a bit, and you know, and it wasn't until years later that actually, and she went on to become a very regular participant. A member who came to you know, a lot of events. It wasn't until I believe years later she actually told me if I had gone to that first meetup and I was the only Asian there, I would never have come back again. So it was just by coincidence that I was there too, that, you know, she did feel at least comfortable enough to return. And you know, it's scary enough coming out for the first time to an event where you don't know anybody in a whole new organization. Even if you don't consider any, you know, demographic issues. So, you know, for someone who's of a minority group, it's especially challenging for that reason. And, that's why I feel like it's certainly very valuable to put on, to do events like that.
So when you succeed at bringing out new people and new demographics, obviously the needs change somewhat. Benita, I know you recently became a humanist celebrant. Is that because the community was becoming young enough to need one? Or did you have other reasons for that?
You could say young enough or old enough. I don't just do weddings.
Fair enough. I was focusing on the positive, but that there are needs at the ends of a lifespan, yes.
Well, actually, I mean, I have done a memorial service, and it was a very positive celebration of life that I felt really honored to be a part of, and I am proud to be able to offer that service to our members and look forward to doing more weddings and baby naming ceremonies and bar mitzvahs. And I have a background in psychology. I actually have a master's degree, and I've always been interested in service, and I just saw that being a celebrant was one way to be of service again. And it's another thing where Vic brought it to the board saying we have this large community and we have a need for this service that is not currently being fulfilled. Would anybody like to step up? And I stepped up, and so far, so good. I've got three weddings on the books, like I said, and I think it's a valuable service to be able to offer. And it's also it's incredibly important to mark these life events and to do it in a way that is respectful and meaningful, you know, without any religion in it.
So is there anything else that either of you would like us to cover within this interview? Anything I didn't bring up that you'd like to?
One thing that I can think of is I really enjoy being on the board, and there's a lot of respect amongst the board members, and I feel like people really do carry their weight, and not one of us feels like we're overwhelmed with too much work to do. And I attribute that a lot to Vic and his leadership, and I'm really proud to be serving on the board with him and the other members of the board.
Thanks, Benita. So certainly having a really great board and a very active board has been a huge asset for us. That's been, I think, our biggest factor in our growth. And yeah, you know, kind of as Benita hinted at, you know, we do get along very well. You know, we kind of have a pretty unified, consistent, you know, vision for what kind of organization that we want to have. And we've kind of put that into, implemented that to try to make that a reality. And, you know, and yeah, we are very, our board is very active in dedicating their time at no compensation. I should, of course, mention, you know, we are 100% volunteer driven in every way. But yeah, we do, you know, monthly board meetings. That typically goes about 2 hours. We also do a lot of, we have a private Facebook group that we, you know, do a lot of our business as well between board meetings, a lot of collaboration and discussion out there. And of course, then there's also any of the many events that we just happen to be at together that, you know, it kind of never stops. You know, there's always kind of some kind of board business or something to discuss relating to the organization, it seems. And, you know, I should also probably add too that, I think one important, very important step that we did, as a board, when I first took over as president, kind of my first priority after putting together, you know, after putting the board together, of course, was to put into place a code of conduct, because we really wanted to put out there, you know, what are our expectations with regard to, if you're going to be coming to our events and be a member of the group, what kinds of behaviors are acceptable and what kinds are not. And we wanted to also, you know, make people feel comfortable coming and being a part of our group, knowing that, you know, we have these expectations in place and we will enforce our code of conduct. And so everybody that joins the meetup group, they get, meetup is great because they give you a function where you can create a welcome email, and then everybody who joins the meetup automatically gets that email. And so, so I put in there kind of just a welcoming statement, you know, kind of a welcome, general welcome to the organization, just some basic information and links and, in there, as well as a link, of course, to the code of conduct so that, make sure everybody, sees that right off the bat. And, we've been pretty fortunate actually in terms of how often we've had to enforce it. But yeah, it does come up from time to time. Somebody, whether it's online or, I guess it's usually online, that somebody might kind of cross the line. And rarely, you know, sometimes somebody in person might cross the line in terms of, you know, misconduct. And when they do, you know, we take action on it and we make sure it comes to a stop. So yeah, I think that's certainly a very important step to making sure you have a welcoming environment and a community that people are interested in being a part of.
Very transparent as well. I mean, the code of conduct is there for everyone to see. And when, you know, it is adhered to consistently, there can, you know, there's just no discussion. I mean, you can go back to the code of conduct and say, you know, this is where we feel that you're not adhering to it or whatever, you know, and there's just, it saves a lot of arguments and heartaches if you can have that to back you up. And I also feel like as a board, we back each other up too. If there's some things that come up, I know that I can trust Vic to enforce the code of conduct if necessary. Or the other thing that we've done recently is make our finances more transparent, and we've instituted more safeguards for protecting the integrity of the donations that we receive. And we strive to be very good stewards of the money that is donated.
And yeah, that's, yeah, good point. I forgot to mention that. And that's also something that we published out there on the website too, is the, I forget the name of the document, but you know, kind of our, just our guidelines and regulations in terms of how we go about handling our funds and spending the funds to provide that reassurance, that, hey, you know, we're taking precautions to make sure that to minimize, the risk of any kind of misuse of funds. We want to definitely make, reassure everybody that we're doing that.
I think we are out of time. So thank you both very much for joining us and telling us about your community. And I look forward to more good things coming out of Houston.
Great.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you, Stephanie.
As always, we value your feedback on the show. Have a comment or question for today's guests? Have a suggestion for a guest you'd like us to interview? Email us at humanisthour@americanhumanist.org or call our listener feedback line at 202-618-1371. Thank you again for listening to the Humanist Hour, the official broadcast of the American Humanist Association.